indication, so I can tell. And so, the case study is going to go because except five people, everybody else, you know, wanted the case study. So I will, you know, so we are going to go with it. Five people, I'm sorry. You'll get a good experience. And and next time you will vote for it too. And so that's my, you know, take on it. And then there was a question, a couple of questions about the quest for the 21st. Today is the 16th? The 16th. Today is the 16th. Apparently, according to the syllabus, yeah, I remember now, according to the syllabus, all the material that was covered through October 14 would be on the second quiz, supposed to be on the second quiz. So the question was, today's material, is it going to be on the quiz? So it can go like this. I'm going to finish the leg and the angle join because it goes very smooth and easy. There isn't too many difficult things there like the hip joint or the knee joint or anything like that. So it's going to go fast and finish it, and then we can look at some, you know, little fractures of this and that and stuff like that also. I'll have time for that. So usually I give it to the class. If you have had or if you have a quiz or another test on Monday or something like that, and if you really, you know, studied out and you don't want to include today's leg and angle joint, I have no problem because we have two outlines. But if the class wants me to include today's, you know, class, that means the third outline, and so that will also be fine with me. So it depends upon you, because of the dates, difference in the dates, do you want me to include today's material on the quiz? Let me, before you say yes or no, let me preface this way. This is the last quiz we're having before the midterms. So you would be studying for the quiz, and so that means everything, all the materials that are going to be on the quiz, on the midterm, would have been studied and tested on, and then you are, you know, having the midterm from the same material. So now take a minute or half a second. You can now tell me yes or no.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Yes. What's the question? What did you say? Yes. No, the question, the answer I'm waiting for is yes or no.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
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 Well, see, the people with the yes are more, you know, what is allowed. And so even if you don't want to know,
yes!
Let's have a nice deep breathing, lung exercise, right, Jack? You know, it usually takes about a week. Midterm is on a Thursday. Midterm is on a Thursday, isn't it? Midterm is on a Thursday. My midterm is 30th, October 30th. And so 21st, I'll try to, you know, bring it on that Tuesday. Okay? So you should be able to get it. Okay, now, final word, quick. Yes or no?
No.
Yes.
Now I have to do that.
Raise hands.
Yeah, show of hands, show of hands, yes.
Wait, yes for what?
Or turn around and look. Yes, we're going to include the material, today's material.
On the quiz.
On the quiz, yes, on the quiz. Okay. Vashani, you can't have it twice, okay. So, no people, your hands. I didn't count, but it's obvious it's the yes takes. Yes takes, yeah. I could really see it. There were lot more hands. There's no point in counting even. You know, I mean, it's like yesterday's debate. Okay, sorry. So here, the leg and angle joint. All right. Now, what bones are found in the leg? What are the leg bones? What did you tell them? What did you tell me?
Tibia
and fibula. Anything else? Yes or no? No. only tibia and fibula. So that means the leg, when Brinkett or I or any of the anatomists talk about, you know, a leg, we are talking about that part of the lower, you know, extremity that is between the knee joint and the ankle joint. So these are the two leg bones, and what does the leg do? You know that, weight bearing, you know, locomotion and everything, and the region, you know that. And then let's move on. Now the parts of both. Okay. The parts of both of these bones you're going to be looking at in the atlas. But what I'll do is I'll take, you know, part of one of the bones, and so you know what to look for, how to look for. So I'll go over, you know, so as you look at what type of bones are these two, how would you classify them? Long bones. Why do you say they are long bones? It has what? Two epiphyses, two epiphyses, this one and a diaphysis or shaft or body. Okay, so this is the shaft, body, or the epiphysis of a long bone. So any bone that has that, you know that. So just because why I ask these questions is when I get some questions from some people, either in tutorial or individually, then I think other people may also have the same questions they are not asking. That's why I go over some of these things. If you wonder what's the matter with this woman, we know this, and so why is she wasting our time? So here, as you look at the proximal end of the tibia, you can see all the details that you need to know. There's only five or six of them here. You have palpated, this is the tibial tuberosity. This you might not have heard. The Gerdes tubercle, and that the structure inserts there. What is inserting there? Iliotibial tract is inserting there, and the lateral and the medial condyles, and the intercondylar eminence that you've seen. So that's about, you know, what you have here, you know, for what is called the proximal end of the tibia. And then you look at the distal end also. The same thing when you look at the proximal end of the fibula. This is the head of the fibula. And what do you see here? Head of the fibula also, you know, is forming an articulation here with the lateral condyle of the tibia. You can see that when you look at it, the head of the fibula and the neck it has, and of course the same thing here. And another thing I like to point out to you is that there is what is called an interosseous border. Interosseous border. Now here, that is the term, even though you might have seen it in your first week preparation of the introductory pages, interosseous is one word. Interosseous. What do you understand from that? Interosseous. In between the bones. In between the bones. Interosseous. In between. So it's connected together. You know, anatomists have a way of, you know, putting words together, meshing them together. Interosseous. So it can be anything interosseous. So here, you know, there is an interosseous border. So what do you think will be attaching to this border? This is how you should think when you are seeing these, you know, diagrams in mirror and or on the bone. When you see a term like that you don't know, try to figure it out. Try to figure it out. You can use your logic and figure interosseous border. So what do you think will be, and there's an interosseous border here also. So what do you think will be attaching there? Interosseous membrane. So there is an interosseous membrane that you haven't, you know, seen or heard about it before, unless you have, you know, previewed. As you look at the interosseous membrane here, let's see that interosseous membrane right here. See, here you can see part of it. Here you can see part of the interosseous membrane, And you can see the other, you know, one here. Let me also see, there should be, this one doesn't have, but there's another one. I was hoping there's more of the interosseous membrane that can be seen. It's the same thing. But, so it is connecting these two bones. That is obvious to you. But you also see that interosseous membrane, what else is it doing? It's connecting the tibia and the fibula. And then you see a hole there. Then you see a hole there. So what do you think this interosseous membrane is doing in other than, you know, connecting the two bones and it has holes? And what else do you think the interosseous membrane will be doing there? Because the same membrane and the same, the markings, fibula, tibia, you're going to be, you know, looking at. Thank you. All right, so I thought maybe some others will go off also. Once when I was teaching here, we had an earthquake. And so I thought the students were, you know, really pulling my leg or something. So this started moving. The image started moving. And we didn't know. And so interosseous membrane, okay, now it connects the two bones and you saw the holes in the interosseous membrane here, one here. Now what do you want to tell me about these holes and what else does the interosseous membrane do? It compartmentalizes the leg. So because it is connecting these two parallel bones, and so it is participating in the compartmentalization of the leg. So here we have the space here. So you have the interosseous membrane here as it is sitting here. So now you have an anterior compartment and you have a posterior compartment. So you have an anterior compartment and you have a posterior compartment because, you know, there's something blocking here. So there is an anterior compartment and there's a posterior compartment to the leg. So the leg has now, you're seeing, has an anterior and a posterior compartment. And then, why do we have these holes there? Why do we have these holes in the interosseous membrane? For passage of your arteries. For example, when you look at the artery here, you can see the arteries here, posterior tibial artery, anterior tibial artery. So, as you look at it here, is your popliteal artery here, in the popliteal fossa. And you can see, right below, that means below the lower border of your popliteus muscle, here, that popliteus artery is branching into a posterior tibial artery and an anterior tibial artery. See here? That anterior tibial comes to the front, into the anterior compartment. That's what's called the anterior tibial. You know, so it is coming into the anterior compartment of the leg through that opening. So this is the anterior tibial coming in through that opening to the front, to the anterior compartment of the leg. And then the lower opening here in the interosseous membrane, the lower opening here, you have also an artery going to the front. That artery is different. So here you have what is called a fibular or the peroneal artery that is in the posterior compartment, and the branch of that goes to the front, goes to the anterior compartment. That is called the perforating branch. The perforating branch, I'm not very particular about the name, that perforating branch, but if you know there is an artery, anterior tibial, you must know the name, but the lower opening there is called the perforating branch of the peroneal artery. Okay, so that's why we have those two openings in the interosseous, you know, membrane. And then, so now the rest of the information on these two bones, that means what other bony landmarks or anatomical landmarks that you find on these two bones, please look them up, very easy. It will take only about 6 or 7 minutes for you to look up the rest of the information. And you've also seen, as you are looking here, that these two bones, you know, articulate. There are two joints, there are two joints formed by these two bones. There's a proximal or superior tibiofibular joint, that is this one here. Proximal or superior tibiofibular joint. When you hear that term, proximal or superior tibiofibular joint, why do you call it proximal or superior? What would you think at that time? What are you thinking about at the time? There's also an inferior, there's also another one. There's also an inferior, you know, tibiofibular joint. Otherwise, why would we call it proximal? We can just say the tibiofibular joint. The knee joint, we didn't say inferior, superior, anything. We just said the knee joint. We just said the hip joint. But this one, we said superior. So whenever we, you know, qualify something like that, you know, peroneus longus muscle, that means there's a, another one, peroneus, you know, brevis and peroneus tertius and peroneus augustus, okay? So as you look at it here, the type of this joint, the first word, the proximal tibiofibular joint, what the type of the joint and the movement. The type of the joint will immediately tell you what type of movement you can expect. That is the reason why I ask you what type of a joint is this one. What type of a joint do you think is this one? Fibrous will be down here.
Oh, sorry.
The fibrous is down here. And so the inferior tibiofibular is fibrous. And so this one has to allow, look at the structure here. This one has to allow some movement when you look at it here. So there's quite some movement here. Therefore, this is a synovial joint of the plane type. Synovial joint of the plane type. Synovial joint of the plane type. What is plane? Is it not having any makeup or any jewelry or something? What is plain about it? It's a surface. It allows only movement in one plane, only one plane movement, and so allows slight gliding or, you know, gliding or sliding. Slight gliding or sliding. And so this is a synovial joint, a plain type of synovial joint. And so therefore slight. And so the movement, when we look at it here, and the movement, that means when you are dorsiflexing and plantar flexing the foot. When you're dorsiflexing and plantar flexing the foot, as you look at it here, see, that's the foot here. When you're dorsiflexing, this will go push, you know, the distal end of the fibula up. So that slight movement will be there. So dorsiflexion. And plantar flexion also, there's slight movement, but not as much. Not as much as when you're dorsiflexing. And so, during dorsiflexion of the foot, plantar flexion of the foot, there's slight gliding movement taking place at the proximal tibiofibular joint. Okay? And articulating parts you've already seen. And what parts are, you know, articulating. And then, it does, since it's a synovial joint, I don't have to tell you what are the characteristics of synovial joints. And it's a small synovial joint, so therefore I'm not going to spend time with the synovial joint, with a small thing here. Jessie Carroll. Oh, I just wanted to let you know, I know who I'm speaking to. Yeah. So Jessie's question was, the articulating parts will be, and she wanted me to fill in the blank, and so will be the lateral condyle, will be the lateral condyle of the tibia and the head of the fibula. The lateral condyle of the tibia and the head of the fibula. And it has small ligaments. I'm not going to pay any attention to the small ligaments that are there. But as a physician, you should be aware that there are, you know, small ligaments. Anterior, posterior, as you look at it, there are some ligaments holding these two bones together. Of course it has a fibrous capsule. Of course it has a synovial membrane because it is a synovial joint. So it has all those details. But in class, I'm not going to pay, you know, any, you know, attention to such details, you know, about, you know, the synovial joint, you know, and all this. But whatever is outstanding features there, I would go over. The synovial membrane, you know, here has, you know, something that you may need to know. The synovial membrane here is in communication with the popliteus bursa. The popliteus bursa. The popliteus bursa. Okay? So the synovial membrane is in communication or is in connection with the popliteus bursa. You may remember we talked about the popliteus bursa. That popliteus bursa only in, this communication is only in about 20% of the people. So this communication, this is communication sign. This means they, you know, and, you know, they. And so here, 20% of the people, there is a communication between the popliteus and also you have to say popliteus bursa, just referring to the muscle or the bursa, not popliteal bursa, not popliteal muscle, no, popliteus muscle and the popliteus bursa. Popliteal pertaining to the what? Popliteal fossa, pertaining to the popliteal fossa. So popliteus bursa. And this synovial membrane of the proximal tibiofibular joint, you know, may communicate in 20% of the people. So what does that mean to you? Why should I mention that to you? Why? Yeah, so if there's an infection, if there's an infection. And so indirectly, the synovial membrane of the proximal tibiofibular joint is in communication with the knee joint cavity. Indirectly, it's in communication with the knee joint cavity because the popliteus bursa is in communication with the knee joint. And if this synovial membrane is, you know, in communication with the popliteus bursa, then you may want to think as you look at it here, here is the origin of the popliteus muscle. And you can see the popliteus bursa. So here is the you can see part of the connecting ligament and deep to that your fibrous capsule and inside lining, you know, is your synovial membrane. And so here, as you look at it here, and so the popliteus bursa, as it is bulging down the synovial membrane of this joint, the proximal tibiofibular joint, there is, you know, communication, you know, between those two. So indirectly, the proximal tibiofibular joint in 20% of the people only, not in everyone, there is the possibility that infection, if it is present in this bursa, and that means not the bursa, the in the joint cavity, that can move into the knee joint cavity. Okay? And that is a clinical, you know, point that when you are examining somebody that, you know, has a problem there, you want to keep that in mind. And then let's move on to this here, the okay, yeah, we have gone over the synovial membrane and blood supply and innovation. You can find that blood supply and innovation just one or two lines on page 701, fifth edition. K701 fifth edition gives you, you know, the great supply. Let me see if I have the page number for the fourth edition great supply, tibiofibular joint. Page 632 for the fourth edition. Page 632 for the fourth edition people. And so here, 632, fourth edition, and page 701, fifth edition. Okay? So that's just only two lines, you can look that up. And then let's move on to the innovation you have done, blood supply you have done. Let's go to the distals. Okay, I've answered this question in the outline. You know, this we have already answered. The distal tibiofibular joint, we've already... Yes?
On the outline, you wrote out number 5, synovial membrane, and then number 6, it just says membrane.
That is the synovial membrane. When I enlarged, you know, the print, it's a membrane came on one place. So I let it be, yeah. Synovial membrane, there's no other membrane. There's no other membrane there, yeah. Now, the distal tibiofibular joint, Amy Fitzpatrick has already told us what type it is. And so, fibrous. And so if it is fibrous, before we go to, so let's go to the distal tibiofibular joint as we come to look at it here. Okay, this is the tibiofibular joint, okay? Fibrous joint, articulating parts. What parts are articulating? Quick go over, so we can go over and then we can do some fractures and things like that. What are these articulating parts? Look at it and tell me. Lower ends off. Your fibula and the tibia. Lower ends or inferior ends, lower ends of your tibia and the fibula articulating, and then as you look at it here, if it's a fibrous joint, how much movement will be there? There should not be any, but there is very, very slight, extremely slight, more, you know, I mean, not like what you have here, less than that, very slight, you know, movement is there, because when the fibula is, you know, getting pushed up here a little bit, and so, but it cannot have a whole lot of movement, because the stability of the ankle joint depends also on how these two bones are held together. So the stability of the ankle joint, when we come to do the ankle joint, you would note that these two bones are participating. As we're going to look at the ankle joint today, you will see that the fibula and the tibia and the talus. And so you can see the tibia and the fibula together form a socket, you know, here. So because of that, you need these two to stay together. If they are, you know, far apart, you know, you'll have dislocation, you know, of the ankle joint. And so therefore, so they are held together by fibrous connective tissue. They are held, the articulating parts are held together by, you know, fibrous connective tissue. And also, there is a thin, what is called interosseous ligament coming from here, communicating with the interosseous membrane, you know, here. So it is, you know, held, you know, together, you know, very, you know, firmly. And so movement is very, very limited, hardly any is there. And the same thing with the anterior and posterior tibiofibular ligaments. They are there, but I'm not going to name them. I don't think that's just, these are details that I'm not going to go over. But I'd like you to know what parts are articulating what type of joint is it, and so what movement is permitted there, and so that is, you know, what is important when we come to look at some of the smaller joints. Some of the details I'm not going to, you know, go over. Blood supply and nerve supply. Blood and nerve supply also, you know, here, as you look at the blood and nerve supply, I would go over the blood and nerve supply here because the reason is, you know, it is coming from three different places, not just one or two lines. Okay, blood supply, branches of the anterior tibial, posterior tibial, and the perforating. So there are three sources coming, you know, to give blood supply here. Okay? And so nerve also, there are three nerves innervating the inferior or the distal tibiofibular joint. You have, you know, branches of the tibial, and you have branches of the saphenous. What type of a nerve is the saphenous nerve? What type of a... It is cutaneous. Cutaneous. So where do you think the saphenous nerve will be innervating here? The skin. The skin. The skin over this joint. The skin over this joint. Saphenous. And what else? Saphenous and what else? Tibia. And what else? Deep peroneal or deep fibula. Deep fibular nucleus. Deep fibular or peroneal, tibial, and here saphenous. Saphenous and blood supply, anterior tibial, posterior tibial. Anterior tibial, and your perforating branch from the peroneal, or not? Okay, you guys, fibular, because you guys don't know the peroneal term, fibular. Perforating branch from the fibular artery. From the fibular artery. So that is the blood supply and everything else about the distal or the inferior tibiofibular joint. Okay? So let's move on here. Any questions? Okay. Alright, so next is the clinical things when we look at it. Is there something that you want me to know other than that you're happy? If you need me to know something, you have to speak. Okay? You have to let me know, but when you laugh, I know there's something you are talking about, but anyway, fracture of the tibia from a direct blow. There are several clinical conditions that, you know, that you must know about these bones, because it is tibia is the, you know, most commonly or frequently injured long bone in the body, actually speaking, in the whole body when you take it, okay? So it can be direct blow, it can be fracture of the, you know, lateral malleolus in, you know, certain, you know, what you call sports, you know, people, and there are so many of these associated with the distal and with the proximal end, but one of them, I like to go over the two conditions I like to go over. One of them I like to go over is that when you have a tibial fracture, I'll come to this, but when you have a tibial fracture, what happens is that if that fracture involves the nutrient artery. Can we? Okay, it has a fracture. This is the sign for also fracture. It's not just only the number. In the medical literature, people use this as a fracture. Okay? So, fracture of the tibia can have complications. And if, especially if the fracture involves the nutrient artery. The nutrient artery of the tibia. Okay? The nutrient artery of the tibia is a long artery. It's a long one. It's actually one of the largest nutrient arteries that you will find in the body. And it usually enters the, this one here, the compact bone in the posterior upper third here. And it travels a long way in the compact bone before it enters the medulla. Because in the medulla, you know, you have blood vessels and all those things. So the nutrient artery is all along here, traveling in the compact bone. And so if you have a fracture that involves the nutrient artery of the tibia, and it may not heal as well. The fracture of the tibia may not heal as well because the nutrient artery is damaged, and so therefore for healing you need all the minerals and all the things, you know, for bone healing you need all those things to come to the bone. So that complication, normally the medical terminology for a complication with tibial fracture that involves the nutrient artery of the tibia is what is called non-union, or some people may refer to it as malunion. Malunion is not in the textbook. Okay, so if you look for it, it talks about non-union. Okay, so you can have either of the term, non-union or malunion of the fractured bone. And so let's take this as the tibia here, and so this is so continuing on, you know, here, and so here is the fracture. Okay, the fracture and things I would put here. Okay, so here is the fracture, and so normal healing, when you have, you know, normal healing, what's happening is, okay, it just heals, there may be a little bump for a while, and so that is healed like that. But in case of non-union, what will happen is, so there's no gap here. In case of non-union, so what is happening is, this here, the fracture took place, and the healing is going to this part healed, and the, you know, this here, and there isn't anything in between. There can be a space here. There can be space here. Also, the parts can be not sitting even close together. It can be sitting like that. That means in this direction, this like that. So it may be even, what should I say, even moved a little bit. So that is one of the complications. I'll get to your question in a minute. That's one of the complications you often find in tibial fractures, especially if the tibial fracture involves the nutrient artery that is mostly, you know, in the posterior, you know, in the proximal, you know, part of the tibia that is, you know, there. Yeah, you have a question. I mentioned tibia. What is the next? Non-union can happen with any bones, any long bones, it can happen, but often what you see is in tibia. It can happen anywhere, provided, you know, the nutrition, the general nutrition, you know, diet, general nutrition of the person, and when the medical, you know, care was given, and so many other, you know, contributing factors, if they are all in play, you know, at that time in that one particular person. That can take place for any fractures, but mostly for the long bones, because for the others, you know, it is not, you know, the parts, you know, it is just close by, isn't it? You know, short bones, you know, there isn't any place for non-union. Yeah, so this is long bones, but specifically tibia, but other long bones also it can happen. But in this day and age, you will not find this happening in most other bones, because a lot of people are aware of, you know, balanced diet and increasing the vitamin C and calcium and things like that. And when, especially when somebody has a fracture or when somebody is undergoing healing, you know, of a fracture. Okay? Alright? And so that is one of the things that as a physician, this corner here, you know, for some reason, okay, I'll pay more attention to you. And so, so one of the things that you need to keep in mind is if you are, you know, if you have a patient, you know, who has, and especially people who are not aware of diet, they may be very well educated, they may have 3 degrees or 5 degrees or whatever, but that doesn't mean they know about the diet or, you know, what would, you know, provide healing and things like that, okay? And foot drop. Foot drop is another condition I like to go over in class, because that is, you know, very, you know, important, you know, for people to know foot drop. Foot drop. Alright, so when I look at foot drop, what am I referring to? What position is the foot going to be in? So here, let me show you the anatomical position of the foot. This is the anatomical position of the foot, so you can all see. When I say foot drop, which direction will the foot be? Down or up?
Down.
Down. Okay, now, so now you all agreed it is down, okay? So I agree with you. So it is down, foot drop. What muscles? So your chore as a physician is to figure out what muscles are going to be involved, that means damaged or affected, or, you know, it has problems. Which muscles do you think are going to be involved in a case of foot drop? And you have to give me, okay, tell me which muscles are going to be involved in foot drop. Tibialis? Anterior. Tibialis, anterior, anything else? Anything else? Huh? Okay, how you should attack this problem. If somebody says, I'm sending you a person who has foot drop, but the person got a job in Seattle, is coming to you, and I'd like you to please take this person on and deal with this person. And then, well, you should think of, okay, a case of foot drop, that means the person is not able to lift the foot. That means the person is not able to dorsiflex the foot. Then you should think like this. Okay, what muscles are normally dorsiflexing? What muscles are normally dorsiflexing? You see, this is why I'll go there. This is why I would like you to know the actions of the muscles. It's not, that's why we ask you the actions of the muscles to make sure you have studied it. Okay, so you can diagnose with this kind of thing, okay? So, what muscles are the dorsiflexors of the foot? Pardon me? Extensor, this is clean. Extensor muscles, yeah, that's where you should start. Extensor muscles are in the anterior compartment of the leg, And what do you have in the anterior compartment of the leg? Tibialis anterior here. Tibialis anterior, and so here you have extensor, again its name is extensor hallucis longus. What is it extending when you say extensor hallucis?
Extensor,
The big toe, the big toe, if the big toe extensor hallucis is longus, extensor digitorum longus. The lateral four digits. And so here you have the extensor digitorum. So these muscles, so now you know the muscles. The extensor muscles of the leg are affected.
What about peroneus tertius only mildly,
because you know peroneus tertius is acting with the extensors. Yes. But it is in the lateral compartment, and peroneus tertius, you know, can also be affected because, you know, it has. But what is the main action of the peroneus tertius? Eversion is its main action. So it is only a muscle that's helping, okay, and working with this. Now, what nerve? Now, the next question here is what nerve? You have a question? I have to come close to you. Yes. It's in the lateral compartment, but it doesn't, you know, it works with the extensor, even though it's in the lateral compartment. Yeah. There are little details like that. One of the things I will say is, from developmental, you know, time, like we have developmental phenomena acting in places where the myotomes came from, you know, which ones were sitting together and all those things, okay? But, so in gross anatomy, what you see is what you get. And so here, so when you look at it here, then the next step you need to, I'm taking you step by step through this because the reason is I could ask you questions similar to this on an exam, and then don't tell me we have no idea why she wrote this question, this, that, everything, and this was not discussed in class. No, I cannot discuss everything in class, but I take you through the stage of doing such things, you know, figuring out, being able to figure out. Now you've looked at the muscles, the possibilities of which muscles are affected by knowing the actions of those muscles. Now you know those muscles. Now which nerve is involved? Which nerve is, you know, innervating these muscles? That's the next step. That's the next question. Which nerve is involved? Which nerve is, you know, supplying these muscles? Deep fibula. And suppose, and deep fibula, you're quite right. And so suppose somebody gives you a question and tells you that the common peroneal nerve or the common fibular nerve has a lesion. And your patient manifests, you know, foot drop. The patient is not able to dorsiflex the foot. Would you, in your answer, would you include the nerve involvement as the common peroneals? Would you use that common peroneal if a choice was not deep peroneal? Yes or no? Okay, Vashali said yes. And Vashali, why did you say yes? Because the deep peroneal is a branch of the common peroneal, and so if you don't see the deep peroneal per se written, then you have the information to figure out that the common peroneal gives the two branches, superficial peroneal and the deep peroneal, or superficial fibular and the deep fibular. So the common fibular gives two branches. And so you don't have to be given exactly. On a board exam, nobody's going to give you exactly, you know, what you think should be there. They will tell you, you know, general information. That means we need to know this, the common fibular or the common peroneal or the deep fibular. Only in class exams that I may give you deep peroneal or deep fibular. Okay? on board exams. They may not give you the exact details, but they expect you to know that kind of details, okay? That kind of information. And so now, you should be able to work through any other nerve involvement or muscle involvement in the lower extremity when we come to do it. You know, for example, tibial nerve damage. So a question like this can be asked two ways, and three ways actually. Then somebody can give you the manifestations, that means the signs and symptoms that your patient is unable to do this, that, okay? And then expect you to know the muscles and the nerves involved. Or somebody can give you the lesion of the nerve and expect you to pick out the signs and symptoms, okay? And somebody can give you damaged muscles and expect you to pick up the details from the choices given. So that is where you have to look and think and figure out, oh no, okay, like she was thinking about the peroneus tertius muscle. Oh, but it is not given here. And then I can't proceed further because peroneus tertius has to be here. But it works with it. Why isn't it here? So don't waste your time. Work with the choices and or what is given in the question, what's given in the question. So that is how you work through it, work with it, okay? And so, then let's move on. So there, that was a good example and good participation. And so then we have shin splints. We kind of mentioned shin splints in living anatomy a little bit. But what is involved in shin splints? What do you know about which? Is there a muscle involved within shin splints? Yes? Yeah, which muscle?
Tibialis
anterior. Is there anything else involved other than, you know, the tibialis anterior muscle? Is there any bone involvement? Huh? Tibia. How would the tibia be involved? The impact. And what structure is on the tibia for the impaction? The? What membrane is enveloping the bone? Periosteum. So periosteum, you know, can also, you know, lose blood supply, you know, damage to the periosteum on the tibia. Damage to the periosteum on the tibia can, you know, affect the blood supply to tibia. That's how tibia may become involved. But generally speaking, shin splints is your tibialis anterior, you know, muscle. Tibialis anterior muscle is the muscle that is involved, you know, from repeated microtrauma to tibialis anterior muscle. So when you are jogging, marathon joggers and jogging on concrete, sidewalks, be careful how you are pounding your foot on the concrete, you know, floor, concrete ground. You should be aware, when you're young, everything works very well. You will not know. But as you get older, some of this will start showing up. So be careful, make use of your body so perfectly and beautifully. And so then, the next is going to be the fascia of the leg. Jesse, I saw the time. Let's take a break. Anyway, I saw the two of them looking. I don't know your name.
Sarah.
Sarah, what's your last name?
Amir Bobby.
Wait. Okay. Oh, that's no problem. Amir Marabi. No problem. You know, Amir means? No. In my language, Amir means rich. Yes, not in my language. I mean Hindi.
Amir means rich. Oh, wow.
have noise.
Right, okay, now. Alright, let's go here. Now as we come in the leg, like any place else, shut the door please. Okay, shut the door please. Okay, now here, like any place, when we come in the leg, you have both superficial fascia and the deep fascia. But in the superficial fascia, you may know what structures you expect to see in the superficial fascia. Anywhere you go, what do you expect to see in the superficial fascia? Anywhere you go, you find superficial veins, you find nerve endings, and you find sebaceous glands, sweat glands, and whatnot. And so here, again, when we look in the leg, we have all these things. But what I like to go over in class is what is called the superficial veins. The superficial veins of the leg, here you have what is called your great saphenous vein. And also, we have in the posterior compartment, you know, of the leg here, we also have, you know, what is called your lower. You also have the small saphenous vein. No, the foot. And so you also have the small saphenous vein in the posterior compartment as you look at, you know, here. Okay, so both these are your superficial, you know, veins in the leg. Okay, so as you look at it here, so the two veins that you have, we have lots of superficial veins there, but nobody's going to talk about all the little ones here. We are going to talk about only two superficial veins. One is the small saphenous vein here, and the other one you have seen, the great saphenous vein. So both of them are in the superficial fascia, and both of them are taking origin from where? Where are the superficial veins in the leg taking origin from? The dorsal venous, the dorsal venous plexus. The dorsal venous plexus, as you look at the dorsal venous plexus here, you can see, so here, because when it comes to the blood vessel beginning, so here is the dorsal venous arch. There's so many tributaries to the dorsal venous arch. It has different configurations and it's not all perfect. But so this is, you know, the medial, and this is the lateral side of it. And so from the lateral side, here you have the small saphenous vein taking origin. From the medial side, now this is the foot right here, okay? And the toes and everything is there. So here, all right, okay. And so, that you can see, but what I like to impress upon you are two things about these two, you know, superficial veins. They are both taking origin from the same dorsal venous plexus. The name is the dorsum and the dorsum of the foot. Venous is the venous plexus, okay? And the medial and the lateral aspects. So here is the lateral aspect and it's taking origin and coming. And then there's no memorization involved here. Look at it here. What are the areas is likely to be draining? What structure that you have here in the calf here and some part, you know, of the lateral aspect here What do you think? What is this area? Where is it located? Superficial part here. So subcutaneous tissue. Subcutaneous tissue. No, that's fine, Charles. Subcutaneous tissue right here from the lateral aspect of the foot and here. You know, so just, you know, use your, you know, observation power and use your logical, you know, ability to think and see what it is, you know, going where it is, leg and ankle joint. Okay, so here, let's go here, and you can see the same thing. And what areas are, you know, drained by, this diagram doesn't like to move from here. And I like it to move. Okay, leg and ankle joint, move. Okay, done, no, you haven't. Okay, so here, all right, okay, so it is coming here. Okay, so what the great saphenous vein, and so the great saphenous vein, from where does that drain? The great saphenous vein, what area would it drain? So I'm done with the, with that answer, I'm done with the superficial veins of the lower extremity. That means only the foot, sole of the foot will remain. Okay, you can see that. Here is a beautiful dorsal venous arch or dorsal venous plexus. Either term is interchangeable and you can see it's taking origin. And you can see all kinds of tributaries coming in. I don't worry about them. And coming here. So it is draining all these, you know, subcutaneous tissue here, all the structures, superficial structures, and, you know, ending in there. So those are the two superficial veins that you would find in the lower, you know, extremity. And the other things are there, cutaneous, you know, nerve endings and whatnot are there. And so the other thing is that the next thing as we have here is the deep fascia. Deep fascia, there is one peculiarity about the deep fascia. Deep fascia of the leg is the same fascia continuing. Look at it here. The same fascia. What would you call this deep fascia here? What is this? Fascia lara. And the same fascia lara without any change, when it continues on, right past, right about here, this is the knee joint, right past the knee joint, going all over here, posterior, anterior, medial, everywhere, what would you call that? Crural fascia. So, what does that mean to you? What do you understand when you see the term crural fascia? Crural fascia. That is here. What is that term? Where is it coming from? Plural fascia. That is an adjective, you know, plural, pertaining to the what? Pertaining to what? Plural means what? Crus means Latin, the leg. Crura means legs. But when you're using it, you know, plural, pertaining to the legs, okay? This terminology, I wrote it because we will use it again, over and over again in several other times when we come to do the diaphragm, when we come to do some of the other structures again, the same terminology will be used and I expect you to know these terms at that time. At that time, don't raise your hand and say, what does that mean, the crura? And so that it is. Here it is, the crura and the crus and the crural all going. So with this Latin term, okay? Crus, crura, plural. So the fascia, the deep fascia that is in the leg is what you would call the crural fascia. And you've seen it is nothing but the same deep fascia that you have seen in the thigh as the fascia lata. And so here, when you look at this here, it just like in the thigh, this deep fascia the deep fascia comes and it gives septum. See, here is a septum, here's a septum. And so, what is this here? This is the fibula and this is the tibia. And what? So what is this here? Interosseous membrane. That's the interosseous membrane. So now you can see how the leg is compartmentalized. See the leg compartments, a cross section of the leg as you look at it here. Here you can see tibia and the fibula, and the two of them are connected. And so the interosseous membrane, by connecting these two, is compartmentalizing, helping the compartmentalization. These compartments are called osseofacial compartment. Osseo or osteo. You can use either, but osteofacial. So osteofacial compartments. Okay? So because you have bones and you have fascia, the deep fascia here. Okay, so here. And so this is the interosseous membrane, and this is the anterior compartment, the lateral compartment, and from here on down, right up to there, is the posterior compartment, of the leg. So the crural compartments of the leg, anterior, lateral, and posterior, these are the osteofascial compartments of the leg. And you've seen how these compartments are done. And you've seen the deep fascia has a function there. Not only it envelopes, here's the superficial fascia, skin, superficial fascia. And so deep to that, you have the crural fascia. The same crural fascia comes in and, you know, gives you the septum. So intermuscular septum. So because we have muscles in each of these compartments right here, as you look at it here. So when you are previewing, get such big picture in your head first. When you look at it here, you can see, oh yes, how are all these muscles arranged? You can see the septae, you know, separating each of these, you know, compartments. And so then you can talk about anterior compartment and posterior compartments. And so here, in the osteofascial compartments, the anterior compartment of the leg, as you look at it here, what would you call that compartment, the anterior compartment? What would you call it, the anterior compartment here?
Extensor compartment.
So the big picture here that you're going to have in your brain right now is the anterior compartment of the leg is the extensor compartment. And then into that big picture, anterior compartment, plug in the muscles. What muscles will I find in the extensor compartment? Okay? Then you plug in what artery will I find there. And then the last plug in your nerves. See, then you can work from there. And so anterior or the extensor compartment here, and this is in cross section. Sometimes when you look at a cross section or a longitudinal section, your understanding of the material, you know, will be reinforced, and it may be much easier, you know, if you don't understand. See, when you look at this here, you may not get the same information when you look at the cross-section. So here you have your tibialis anterior. Now, you guys are going to be looking at the origins and insertions and actions of these muscles. Now, when you look at the origins and insertions, right here, you can see the origin here, which is the easiest way to look at it before you look at, after looking at the cross-section. When you go and look at this here, in your atlas or the textbook, it shows you all the red, you know, are origins. These are insertions. And look at it. Here you can see tibialis anterior. See, when that muscle table shows you the name written, interosseous membrane, partially from the interosseous membrane, from the tibia here, and this part here, you know, from the upper medial aspect, you know, of the tibia. But the picture is also here. This, I'm going over this for those people who are not biology majors, those people who have some other background but have taken, you know, some science courses. So that's why I keep bringing some of this information, simple information, but for some of you, but for others it may not be. That's why I bring it back, okay? And so then you see that, and the other beautiful thing I expect you to look at for all people, biology majors, minors, whoever, look at it here. That is looking at the insertions of some of the muscles in the anterior and the lateral compartment here. Look at the several places some muscles go to insert. Instead of memorizing, oh, the navicular, oh, that is okay, what is that? Oh, tibialis posterior, oh, the navicular, the cuneiform, one and two and three. Look at it here. The bases of, just an example, the bases of the second, third, and fourth metatarsals. These are metatarsals. And then you can see the cuneiforms. The cuneiforms are there. And also you can see the navicular. Three cuneiforms and the navicular. And so when you see it like that, it's very easy. And so when you go to the sole of the foot, to do the sole of the foot, deep dissection of the sole of the foot, you will see these tendons coming. You will see these tendons coming. So when you get a patient with fallen arch, or, you know, pain in the foot, in the sole of the foot, you know, all this, the what tendons are going where. And so then you can really see, you know, where, whether they should wear arch support, this, that, everything else that you guys may, you know, tell them, you know, to have. And so here, as you go back, and let's take these nerves, these muscles here. And so the anterior compartment muscles, what nerve, of course you already know what nerve is innervating the anterior compartment muscles. What nerve is innervating the anterior compartment muscles? Deep fibular. And so here you can see, it's not shown here, deep fibular, but the common fibular or the common peroneum is coming, and that divides. But that means all these muscles in the anterior compartment, tibialis anterior, extensor digitorum longus, and your extensor hallucis longus, all of those are receiving from your deep fibular nerve. And then when we go to the lateral compartment here, also called, the lateral compartment is also called the peroneal compartment here. Peroneal compartment here. Peroneus longus and peroneus brevis. And so here, peroneus tertius is sitting here, and you would find a skinny muscle here, sometimes absent, sometimes as part of the extensor digitorum longus. Sometimes you have to pry it when you're dissecting to see that it is the peroneus tertius, because you may be, if it is present, it's not always present. If it is present, you can see a tendon. You can see a tendon going to the fifth metatarsal and follow that tendon, and you can see a little bit here. And that's why books will say it is in the anterior compartment, because, you know, it is sitting as part of, you know, this what do you call, extensor digitorum longus there. And the peroneus brevis and longus, both of them, the tendons are here. You will palpate them in living anatomy, the tendons going down. And peroneus brevis tendon doesn't go down to the sole of the foot. It is inserting right here at the what is called the tubercle here. You know, that is the tubercle of the fifth metatarsal. It is inserting to the tubercle of the fifth metatarsal. So when we talk about sprained ankle, and I will bring that back again, you know, the insertion of the peroneus, you know, brevis muscle is important, you know, for you to look at, because the tertius and the brevis, tertius is in front here, on the same fifth metatarsal. Brevis is on the tubercle. And you should not be arguing with whoever grades your exam. How, but it's on the fifth metatarsal. Hey, but these are two different structures, two different parts of the metatarsal. You know, because if you have a sprained angle, this can be affected. The fibularis brevis tendon can be affected in sprained angle, because in sprained angle, in sprained ankle, what position? That is one of the questions I have written down here. Ankle sprains. Hopkins, I'm going to stop here and ask you. Here, I should have not gone over that part. Ankle sprains. In case a person steps on uneven surface and develops an ankle sprain, in what position would you expect to see the foot to be in? The person was walking and just not looking where he or she was going and then stepped on something. Okay, now, what happens to that foot? In which, okay, I heard all kinds of things now, one person at a time. Inversion. Inversion. That, do you all agree with Radhika that she said it's inversion? Okay, inversion of the foot. Alright, if it's inversion of the foot, this is good. Inversion of the foot, what ligaments are going to be affected? Because you would get inversion, sprained ankle, all kinds of things. Okay, what ligaments are going to be affected in an invert, if the foot is forcibly inverted? What ligaments are going to be affected? Let me take you there. We haven't come there. This is a little bit premature. I was going to do that. I was going to do that with the ankle joint, but a little bit premature. But I see you guys are ready for it. And so here, and the ligament, the lateral ligament of the ankle joint, the lateral collateral ligament of the ankle joint will be affected here. This part, this is the part of the lateral collateral ligament, and so here you can see lateral collateral, and so this is part of the lateral collateral ligament, and so parts of, so this is also part of the lateral collateral ligament. So there are three parts to the lateral collateral ligament of the ankle joint will be affected. And which other ligament would you expect to see to be affected or damaged in a sprained ankle? Is this one or this one? Is it possible? Yes. And that, in addition to all the ligaments that you can have damaged from here, lateral collateral definitely, okay, and that is part of it. Then how about the peroneal ligaments? Any of the peroneal ligaments? Peroneus brevis ligament will be affected. A while ago, I go over this in class most of the time, so all the time when I teach this part. And sometimes people come back and tell me, Dr. Thomas, I remembered, you know, that it was the peroneus brevis, you know, tendon here, not ligament, this tendon here, that can be torn. If the inversion is so violent, that can be torn, and if that is torn, you can have shearing off of the tubercle here. The tuberosity of the fifth metatarsal, this one here, right along with the forceful pull on the peroneus brevis tendon here. So if you have, I'll come to you in a minute, Mary Allison, and so if you have a sprained ankle, if it is forceful, if it is so violent, you can even have shearing of, S-H-E-A-R-I-N-G, shearing off of the, you know, the fifth metatarsal, you know, tuberosity, that is this tuberosity here, along with the peroneus brevis tendon, in addition to the lateral collateral ligaments of the ankle joint. Mary Allison, you have a question?
What about the peroneus longus tendon?
Peroneus longus tendon goes to the sole of the foot. It has a little tunnel there. Whereas the peroneus longus is coming, it's not inserting here. The peroneus longus tendon has a little tunnel here, and then in the tunnel is protected, and it goes under, and it comes to the base of the first metatarsal, and, you know, one other one of the cuneiforms there. So it is going to the medial aspect.
So it's like snap
now, so it will not be, it will not be snapping. And so, okay, so that is, see, so that is applicable, you know, here. And so then let's move on to the next thing. Okay, posterior, lateral compartment, fibular compartment. Okay, in the lateral compartment, what nerve do you expect to see in the, you have previewed for today's class, and I see that, and thank you. And so here, I know most of you, or all of you, have previewed today, and so good. And so here, when you look at it, the lateral compartment, you have the superficial fibular nerve, lateral compartment. And people make a mistake on these two nerves. So pay attention. Deep is here, okay? Superficial is here. And so then what artery would you find in the anterior compartment of the leg? Anterior tibial artery. And what artery would you find in the lateral compartment of the leg? That's a good thought. I'll come back to you. She said common fibula. Common fibula is not physically present. There's no major artery physically present in the lateral compartment of the leg. What is there? The muscles are not dead, are they? But fibula artery, which is a branch of the posterior tibial, gives lots of branches. Here you can see, okay, perforating branches of the peroneal or the fibular artery coming in, also branches from the anterior tibial. So the lateral compartment of the leg doesn't have its own major artery. What does it have? It has branches from, okay, both anterior tibial and the peroneal or the fibular artery. Then we go to the flexor or the posterior compartment of the leg. So now when we talk about the posterior compartment of the leg, that means the muscles in the posterior compartment here, the compartment is called flexor, so they must be flexing. Yes?
I'm sorry, could you just repeat, the lateral compartment of the leg has branches of artery from what?
Anterior tibial and peroneus or the fibula. Peroneal artery or the fibular artery, okay? Branches off. Now, posterior compartment, when we come to it, is a flexor compartment. That means flexing what? What will it be flexing? Why would we call this a flexor compartment? This is the posterior compartment. What will it be flexing, the posterior compartment? The angle, the foot, that means flexor compartment, you know, here. Now, of all these muscles here, there are deep compartment and superficial compartment here. Remember, when you remember the cross-section here you see the deep compartment in the posterior compartment itself right here. So in the posterior compartment here, you have, this is a lower part section, so here. In the deepest part here, you have tibialis posterior, flexor digitorum longus, and flexor hallucis longus. In addition, there's another muscle that we have already studied. Popliteus muscle is also considered in the, popliteus muscle is also considered in the deep part of the posterior compartment. Popliteus muscle here is the popliteus muscle. And then, of course, you know, your gastrocnemius, you know, lateral head, medial head, and then we come to the superficial compartment is where you come to the gastrocnemius and the soleus. Now, there are a couple of little things that you need to know here. Now, what nerve do you think will be innervating the popliteus muscle? Remember that I had, and then I said I will do this with the knee joint, I said we'll do this with the leg. So what nerve is innervating? Tibial nerve. Tibial nerve is innervating the popliteus muscle, and then the action of the popliteus muscle. It will be a little bit confusing to you, and you will waste a lot of time. So what are the actions of the popliteus muscle? Let me go over it in class right now. What actions do you expect? This is the lateral condyle of the femur, of the femur, and this is the tibia it's inserted into. So here is the muscle. So what is the action of the popliteus muscle? What did you say? Yeah, what did you say? Loud, or he will tell me, because he heard. Yeah, it has few actions. It has one weak flexion of the knee joint. Weak flexion of the knee joint, because its origin is high up here. Weak flexion of the knee joint. Medial rotation of the tibia. Medial rotation of the tibia. Medial rotation of the tibia to unlock, you know, the locked knee, Medial rotation, you know, of the tibia. Medial rotation of the tibia. And then you also have what is called lateral rotation. Lateral rotation of the femur. Lateral rotation of the femur. At the beginning of flexion. So this is where you may get confused, okay? Weak flexion of the knee joint, medial rotation of the tibia to unlock the locked knee. The knee is locked. When you're standing like that for a while, the knee is now locked. You know, that is locked knee, okay? You know, now I have to, you know, then, you know, do something with it. So to unlock the locked knee, this popliteus muscle will medially rotate the tibia. Then, and that means, then the lateral rotation of the femur, not of the leg, of the femur, lateral rotation of the femur at the beginning of the flexion. At the beginning of the flexion. Yeah, at the beginning of the flexion, and he's showing me the action, that is very good. And so then, so that is one of the deep muscles, and so the other three deep muscles are, you know, your Tom, Dick and Harry. But let's look at where is Tom and where is Dick and where is Harry. And so let's look at these three muscles as you look at them. So tibialis posterior, as you look at the tibialis posterior coming right down, you know, here, and Harry is flexor hallucis longus. Flexor hallucis longus, you can see right over here, flexor hallucis longus coming into the foot to insert. And so here is the digitorum here. Okay, flexor digitorum, Dick, digitorum, Dick, flexor digitorum. And Tom is tibialis posterior. Tibialis posterior. So when you look at this tendon here, this tendon here, on the way to the foot, you can really see the, you know, the Tom here. See, this is tibialis posterior tendon, and this is, you know, flexor digitorum longus tendon, so that is Dick, and this is Harry coming from the lateral aspect here. All three of them come into the foot under the flexor retinaculum. Look at that there, under the flexor retinaculum. Why would you call that flexor retinaculum? Because these are flexor tendons, these are flexor muscles. So this is the flexor compartment here, okay? And so you would be looking at all their attachments, proximal, distal, and you know, whatnot in the table right there. And then, innervations, all the muscles in the posterior compartment, distal attachment, okay. All the muscles in the posterior compartment of the leg receive innervations from where? Tibial nerve, okay. I have gone over all this because attachments, you know, you have to look at and condense it, but I thought it's easy for people to see, but it goes so far. And yeah, all these actions you have to look at. Oh, one of the things also you need to keep in mind about the gastrocnemius muscle. Gastrocnemius has actions on what joints? Gastrocnemius muscle has actions on what joins the gastrocnemius. So where is it coming? What is the origin of the gastrocnemius muscle here? The gastrocnemius has origin from where? The chordalis of the femur. So what place, where will it have its, it will have its actions? On the knee, only on the knee? And also the ankle, also the ankle, also the ankle. What action on the ankle? Flexion of the ankle. What action on the knee? Flexion also, flexion also. So that you need to keep in mind. And then there's a thing called triceps surae. Triceps surae, okay? What is that triceps surae? What muscles are included in triceps surae? If somebody asks you, about triceps surae, what would you say? Triceps surae. Yeah, the two heads of the gastrocnemius, the two heads of the gastrocnemius, and the soleus, and the soleus muscle. And the soleus muscle. And then the superficial veins I have already included in the superficial fascia, great sapulus, and the small sapulus, and their origins and insertions, that means not insertions, terminations that you have seen. Deep veins in the leg. When you look at the deep veins in the leg, popliteal vein. Now remember, how is the popliteal vein formed? It's forming. Popliteal vein is forming. So how are the popliteal veins formed? How many popliteal veins are there in each leg? Only one each. But so when I say veins, I don't want you to get the impression there are two. Only one on the right, one on the left. And so here, as we are looking at it here, then we look at also the formation, because the popliteal vein is forming. And because what is it doing? The popliteal vein, what is it doing? Bringing the venous blood, to which vein? The femoral vein, and ultimately, to the heart. But, and so that means it's forming. That means it gets tributaries. That means what are the logical veins that are supposed to be forming there, that you can think of, even if you haven't looked at it. But I know you have, because today I can see that you have all previewed. So what veins do you see here? What veins will be there? Anterior tibial and posterior tibial. How could you have figured it out? If you haven't had a chance to look at it, how could you have figured it out? Because of the arteries, she said, because of the arteries. Because she has seen the popliteal artery is divided into an anterior tibial artery and a posterior tibial artery. So then she figured out that the popliteal vein must be being formed by the anterior tibial and the posterior tibial. And so if it is formed, why is it forming? To bring the venous blood. Okay? So the venous drainage from the leg is conducted by these veins here, and then as they go, they become tributaries and they join big veins and keep going. And what else you may remember about these veins and these arteries? You have a posterior tibial artery, you have posterior tibial veins, anterior tibial artery, anterior tibial veins. What would you call those veins in addition to deep veins? What did we go over some time ago? That's right, venae, she showed me, venae comitandae, companion veins. So on a dissection lab exam, when you look at the posterior tibial artery right in the middle with the two other little structures like veins, That means those are the two posterior tibial veins, venae palmitantae, companion veins. So you don't get, you know, scared, oh, there can only be one vein and one artery, there are three here, I don't know this. Don't, you know, give up your, you know, put up your hands in the air and say, I don't know this, I don't know from where it came. No. Remember, there are two posterior tibial veins. There are two anterior tibial veins, okay? And we have gone over what arteries we find in the anterior tibial, I mean, in the anterior compartment, lateral compartment, and the posterior compartment of the leg. Now, let me go back and ask you one question. What major, just pay attention now to my words, what major artery did you find in the lateral compartment of the leg? None. She's quite right. None. But she told us already how the muscles and structures are getting supplied. How? Yeah, but branches from? Anterior tibial and peroneal. Anterior tibial and peroneal. Okay? Now, let's look at some of the clinical deals here. I have... Pardon me? Posterior compartment? Posterior tibial. Which gives your peroneal, okay? Especially in dissection, when you see that, you may get confused. A lot of times people will think the coronary artery or the fibular artery that is in the posterior compartment is a branch of the tibial. That's not the case. It doesn't come from the tibial. It comes from the posterior tibial. Posterior tibial, and so there are two arteries, major arteries you will find in the posterior compartment. Posterior tibial, and here, which is the other one? Murium, which is the other one? The peroneal or the fibula. Posterior compartment. See here? So in the outline, when you look at it here, in the posterior compartment, posterior tibial artery giving rise to your fibular artery. Okay? That's in the outline. Clinical note. This you may want to, you know, pay attention to in that blocked sural artery may result in necrosis of the gastrocnemius muscle. You know the term necrosis already. Necrophilia, necropolis, necro, so dead tissue. So why would we have gastrocnemius muscle showing some dead tissue if the blocked sural arteries are, or the sural arteries are blocked? That's right. These sural arteries, that means that the only blood supply, sural arteries are the only blood supply to the gastrocnemius muscle. Sural arteries are the only blood supply to the gastrocnemius muscle. And so if that is blocked, then you can have necrosis of the gastrocnemius muscle. Sural arteries, what are the branches of? Sural arteries, what are the branches of? Any idea? They are coming from the popliteal. Okay? They are coming from the popliteal. Now, if they are blocked, how can they be? Okay, it can be anything. Sclerosis, whatever else, it can be blocked. And so, the tissue can become dead. What do you think is the reason for that? How can that happen? Okay, there is blockage. If there is blockage, we have studied that there is anastomosis in there. And so if this tissue becomes dead, do you think there is anastomosis? Do you think the anastomosis is working? Do you think what's happening to the anastomosis there? The anastomosis the sural arteries have are not among the major or reasonably big branches. The anastomoses that the sural arteries have are only at the anastomoses of sural arteries are only at the capillary level. Only at the capillary level. And the capillary level, you know, supply is not good enough, you know, to maintain, you know, the tissue. And so therefore, I'll come to you in a minute. Therefore, such arteries, arteries that do not have anastomosis via reasonably big, you know, branches are called end arteries. We have end arteries in many, in not many, few places in the body. This is one of the places. End arteries you will find in the retina. You would find end arteries in few other places. I'll go over that later. Yes, you had a question. They have capillaries
right.
Only. They don't have, you know, small, yeah, medium-sized or small arteries. Their anastomosis is only. They have branches, but they are not anastomosis.
Right.
They have branches to go to the large popliteus, what do you call the gastrocnemius muscles. But those branches just go to the tissue. But they are not anastomosis. Okay. So therefore, when anastomosis is only at the capillary level, then we will call those arteries end arteries. And I will ask you again when we do the retina or when we do some other areas where we have end arteries. You know, spleen, you know, is another, you know, place that you can look for, because when you look at the spleen, you have red pulp, white pulp, all those. Okay. Now, sorry, I could not go over, you know, this entire outline. That means the ankle joint, you know, is not included. So that means since we agreed to have this material on Tuesday's quiz, we agreed, didn't we? Because we, yeah, the show of hands, I will not include the ankle joint on the quiz. I will only go up to the posterior compartment of the leg. That means the lower limb one and the knee joint and this outline right up to the posterior compartment of the leg is what we will have on the quiz on Tuesday. So and then I'll, after the quiz, I'll complete the ankle joint and summarize the whole thing, and then we'll move on to the next outline, the foot. Okay, so I make sure I'll put the case study on my feet. Okay? Yeah, look for it. Thank you.
Okay.